Parsha Shlach. And as we all know, Parsha Shlach tells us the story of the spies and the terrible tragedy where Moshe Rabbeinu sent spies, and instead of the spies coming and speaking about how wonderful the land was, they come back and they say it's a terrible land, Eretz Ochelos Yoshvehi, it's a horrible place, it's not a good idea to go. And the Jewish people mourn, and as a result, we lose the right to enter into Eretz Yisrael. So Shem Yishmuel, Rav Shmuel Bornstein, has a lot of beautiful explanations on this parsha. I thought it'd be worthwhile for us to learn what he taught about this parsha in 1915. So this is World War I. He wasn't in Sachetchav. He ended up in World War I, stuck in Germany. It was in Europe. Many of the great rabbis, come the summer, August time, they used to go away from their little town, wherever they lived, and they would go for a vacation, a couple of weeks, to a spring or a spa. And there used to be spas in northern Germany. There was a big spa town in Czechoslovakia, Pistiani. There was a big spa, I forget the second part, Bad something in Germany. So he went to a spa to you know, unwind a little bit, refresh before the coming year. As we know, World War I broke out in August of 1914. So it was Tisha B'Av 1914. So he ended up stuck in Germany. He was from Poland. Poland was Russia. So he ended up stuck in Germany with a Russian passport. And his family was back in Poland, in Sachetchav, which is near Warsaw. So you listen to this Dvar Torah. You know, here's a man. He's away from his family. There's a war going on, a world war. And you can't really tell, but if you think deeply, you can tell. There's something very powerful that he's trying to tell himself and tell everybody else during this period. So he begins with the Medrash. The Medrash says, in this week's parasha, Rav Acha explained the verse, Yavesh Chatzir Navel Tzitz. The plant has withered. V'dvar Elokeinu Yakum La'olam. But the word of our God will last forever. This is a parable to a king who has a dear friend. And he tells the friend, come with me because I want to give you a big present. So the friend comes with his family, with the king. And as they're traveling, the friend dies. So the king turns to the son. Even though your father died, I wanted to give him a present. Now I'm going to give it to you. So to the Almighty. The Almighty had a friend. That's Avram Avinu. He told his friend, Avram Avinu, come walk with me. Lech lecha me'artzecha mol'atecha. Walk away from your parents' home. Follow me. Come to where I send you to go. Avram went, but Avram died. Avram had been promised the land. But God says, since I promised it to the father, I'll give it to the kids. I'm going to give the land to the Jewish people. That's the Medrash. So Shem Yishmuel says, I don't understand. When God tells Avram that he's going to get the land, he tells him that your kids are going to get the land. God says, Kumi talech ba'aretz, get up, walk in the land to its length, to its width. Ki lecha lezarecha etnena, for to you and your seeds, I will give it to them. I'll give it to your children. The Bris Bein Absarim, God tells Avram, your descendants will be slaves, they'll be strangers, they'll be afflicted. V'dor revi yashuvu heina, the fourth generation is coming back here. They're going to get the land. So Hashem, from the very beginning, had promised it to the children of Avram. So what's the Medrash comparison? The Medrash says, a king says to his friend, I want to see that you love me, come with me. And if you come with me, I'll give you a present. Friend's coming, and then he dies. The king says, okay, now the present goes to your son because I promised it to you. But Hashem had originally promised the land of Israel to the children. So the Shem Yishmuel says a very beautiful thing. A very beautiful thing. Hashem had promised the land of Israel to the children of Avraham when you can see in their behavior that they're Avraham's children. Mm. When they act like Avraham. But sometimes you have Jews, you cannot even tell that they're Jews. The way they act is so foreign from what Hashem wants us to do that we don't even look like the children of Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. And at that point, we don't deserve the land. But Hashem says, I'm going to give the land anyway because I promised it to you. So what is that key point? And here the Shem Yishmuel perhaps was talking to himself and talking to the community. Sometimes it's important not to think so much. You know, we always talk about how Talmud Torah is the greatest value. Jewish people, we talk about a Yiddish cup, a Jewish head. Jews are so smart. Jews win so many Nobel Prizes. You know, I've quoted here before that in South Korea, there's a lot of interest in the learning of Gemara because they want to reverse engineer the Jewish mind. Trying to figure out why Jews win so many Nobel Prizes. So they decided it's because the Jewish genetic code is smarter because Jews in Europe used to learn Gemara. So the back and forth in the dialectic must make the mind sharper. So there are a lot of clubs in North Korea where they learn Gemara in high school. They even have hotels named the Talmud Hotel to try to reverse engineer the Jewish head so that they could also be smart. We always think, you know, Jews are so smart, Jews are so creative, Jews are so argumentative, legalistic, pilpulistic, whatever term we want to use. But you know what? Sometimes it's better not to be so smart. And to say, you know what? I'm just not thinking. I'm just following. That's called midat hatmimut. Mm-hmm. The attribute of being a tamim. Tamim means a naive person, gullible. But sometimes it's good to be naive. So you know what? He doesn't think so much. He doesn't know so much. But he knows what it says, and he does what it says. And that's it. God says he's doing it. He doesn't ask, maybe, what about this, what about that? He's given a mitzvah, given a command. That's it. He doesn't ask anything. And he accepts. He has tremendous faith. He has tremendous acceptance. There's something very, very powerful about midat ha-tmimut. The Torah uses it, in this term, tmimut, in telling us not to be sorcerers. The Torah says, lo sa'oninu, lo sa'nachashu. You know, don't... what was the name of the book? Black Swan? About, you know, a confluence of unusual events. You know, if you see a black swan, so it's unlucky, or the people used to think if there's a black cat that crosses your... in the road, or you see something in the stars, it's not a lucky day. I remember once I met a horoscopist. His name was Herzl Lifshitz. So he was telling me, you know, in March, the market's going to go up based on the stars. In September, it's going down. What does anybody know? You know, if a person makes decisions about investments based on the horoscopes of the stars or the black cats or the black swans, that's already trying to outsmart God. God says, tamim tihyeh, don't try to know so much, figure out so much. Go with a simple mind. Do the right thing, correct thing, what seems to you to be correct. And don't try to figure out so much, figure out too much. Says the Shem Yishmuel, Rashi says there, if you are a tamim, if you're a tamim, that means you're very connected to God. You trust God. You don't need to ask so much. It doesn't have to be explained. You don't have to figure it all out. God said you do. That means you're very, very attached to God. And a person who's very attached to God, he already belongs to God. Then he becomes chelko. He becomes the portion of God. He becomes attached to God. Avraham Avinu, he was a tamim. Think about it. God says, go. Does he say where? Does he say, do I have provisions? Am I ready for it? He goes. Doesn't know where, doesn't know when he's going to stop. He gets to Eretz Yisrael, it seems to be the place, and then there's a famine, he has to leave. He also doesn't question, he goes. Avraham Avinu is a tamim. A tamim who accepts, you know what, this is the law, this is what I do. That's it, I don't ask any further questions, I don't have any further doubts, I follow whatever the law is. A tamim, he merits, a person who's a tamim, he merits to be lechelko lenachlato, to be the portion and inheritance of the Almighty. He is really attached. God gave the land to Avraham's seed, to people who would be tamimim, who would listen, whatever God says, that's what I do. I don't have questions. I accept. You know, Rav Nachman of Breslov, he was a very great thinker, very brilliant. And he was a philosopher whose philosophy was to reject philosophy. His whole ideology was, don't think so much. So at the end of his life, he was a young man that didn't even reach the age of 40, unfortunately. At the end of his life, Rabbi Nachman stopped saying Divrei Torah, and instead, he shared parables, very lengthy stories. So he has a story called the Chacham and the Tam, the wise one and the Tam, the Tamim, the simple one, the simpleton. So he has this whole story where there are these two people, one is very brilliant and the other is very simple. And the one who's very brilliant, he's a prince and he's supposed to become king. And he says, you know, I need to understand everything, and anyone who can explain things to me, I'll give them money. So the more brilliant you are and the more brilliant the comment you make to me, the more money I'll give you. So people come and they all start with these brilliant analyses. Until eventually somebody comes and he proves that really they don't exist. That he doesn't exist, that the king doesn't exist. And the guy gives him money for this brilliant exposition about how he really doesn't exist. And then he gets all depressed, if I don't exist, so what am I here and what am I doing? And he gets all sad and he gives up the kingdom. Meanwhile, he has this friend, the simpleton. Everything that happens, it's all good. He goes into a business that doesn't work out, it's good, he's fine, he's happy. He eventually meets somebody who's looking for a trustworthy man. He finds this fellow. Everything's good. He's always upbeat. He invests with him. Everything's good. And eventually this fellow, everything in life was good. He never asked too many questions. He was always happy. He was always accepting. He's the one who succeeds at the end of the story, whereas the prince, who's so attached to understanding and wisdom, he gets all confused and nonsensical, really, almost nihilistic, you know. Nothing is meaningful, everything is a waste. And what Rav Nachman was, you know, sort of predicting in that story is the modern world, you know, modern professors today, it's crazy, there's no right, there's no wrong. Everything is relative, moral relativism, you're not sure if something does exist, if it doesn't exist, nobody's certain about anything, you can't be certain about anything. And, you know, the simple people, they don't understand so much. They're not so smart. They're really very smart. They say, I don't need all of that. I know there's right and there's wrong, and I'm happy with whatever God gives to me, and I'm good. And I don't need to figure it all out. I don't need to be the Nobel Prize winner of philosophy. I accept the tamimos. They have a much better life. They're tamimim. Avraham Avinu was a tamim. He doesn't ask any questions. God says, go, he goes. But here the Jewish people were about to enter the land of Israel. And we said, we want to see the land. We want to find out, what's it like? Is it good? How do we conquer it? Should we conquer it? So God says, 1 second, now you're losing the whole attribute of tamimus. So I promised it to Avraham's seed. Those are the ones who follow in the way of Avraham. But now you're not following the way of Avraham. You're second guessing. You want it all to make sense to you. So then you really don't deserve the land. But I'll give you the land because I promised it to Avraham. Because I promised it to Avraham, I'm going to give you the land. Even though at this point, you're no longer really deserving of the land. That's what the Shem Yishmuel's father explained. The truth is, if we really go back to the whole story of the very first sin, that's what we can understand it as being, that story. Adam eats from the tree of knowledge. He wanted to understand too much. Had he eaten from the tree of life, just accepting. Yeah, Hashem said not to eat from the tree. Sure, there's logic and there are explanations about why I should, why it'd be good for me. But Hashem said not to. If he would have just accepted Hashem said not to, then it would have been, you know, a far, far, you know, different experience, a very different chavaya. Says the Shem Yishmuel, to add to this, the Medrash says in Bereishis, that the land of Israel, Eretz Yisrael, obviously is the ultimate Eretz, the ultimate land. And the Medrash says, what's the meaning of the phrase Eretz? Eretz is from the word ratzon, to want. Sheratzta la'asot ratzon kona, that it wanted to do the will of its maker. Apparently, the way the world was originally created, the world just wanted to do God's will. But when we ate from the tree of knowledge, we caused the world to be corrupted, and now it had all sorts of other things that it wanted to do. But Eretz Yisrael, that's the will of Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael. Ratzon, Ratzta Yisrael. Yashar Kel, straight to God. Eretz Yisrael is the land that wants to do God's will. So if the Jewish people are people who are tmimim, they don't think so much, they don't ask so much, they just accept God's will, that's it. Whatever God's will is, that's it. Whatever the rabbis say, whatever the Torah says, that's what I do, without questioning. A nation that would have that type of tmimus, no matter what, we do God's will, that would be a nation that would merit to get Eretz Yisrael, a land that naturally wants to flow towards God. A people that have this tmimus, they would merit to get Eretz Yisrael that naturally is drawn to God. But once they started with challenges, you know what, we're not sure if we want it, we want to see it. So then already the Jewish people lose Eretz Yisrael. Maybe that's why in the desert Hashem led us with a cloud, which we learned in Parshas Baalosra. Cloud would go here, we'd go there, we'd go to the other direction, go to the other direction. There was really no logic to how we were traveling in the desert. It wasn't the fastest route, but it was to train us to be people who would be tzmimim, to accept. You know, God says to go to the right, you go to the right. He says go to the left, we go to the left. We'd be tzmimim, because when we're tzmimim, then we can enter into Eretz Yisrael. Avram Avinu, he entered Eretz Yisrael without even a cloud leading him. So certainly we, who had a cloud telling us to go to Eretz Yisrael, we should have gone right in. And then we would have inherited Eretz Yisrael in the right way. So the Shem Yishmuel then added, in Parshas Dvarim, the Torah adds details to the story of the spies. In Parshas Dvarim, we're told that the Jewish people gathered around Moshe, and they put a lot of pressure on him to send spies. And Moshe gave in. In our Parsha, it's presented that Hashem told Moshe, go send spies. So what was it? Was it that the Jewish people put pressure and then Moshe gave in? Or did Hashem tell Moshe, go send spies? Suggests the Shem Yishmuel that it's both things. The Jewish people put pressure on Moshe. And Hashem said, okay, here's the answer. I'm telling you to go send. What's pshat? When somebody is a shliach of somebody else, the halacha is shlucho shel adam kimoto. The person I send, he has my power. Whatever power I have, the person who represents me has that power. So if the Jewish nation is sending emissaries, so they're going like the Jewish nation. The Jewish nation, they didn't have tmimus. Mm-hmm. They wanted to know, they were questioning, they were asking, they weren't going with simple faith. But Moshe, he had tmimus. He had complete faith. So Hashem says to Moshe, they're asking that the spies should be sent from them. But I want you to send the spies. Shlach lecha Hashem. Because if you send the spies and the spies are representing you, then they're going to go with tmimus. They're going to go with your thinking. Shlucho shel adam kimoto. They're going to go in to enter the land, whoever way God sends them. And then they're going to get the land. But if they're going to go from the perspective of the nation already is asking questions. If they're asking questions, they're not deserving of the land. And if they're not deserving of the land, then the sending of the spies will not work. And they'll come back with a bad report. Maybe this can answer the following question. It says in the beginning of the parsha, the names of the 12 spies, and the Torah says, Kulam Anashim. All of them were men, men of stature. So Rashi says, Anashim means chashuvim, prominent. And initially they were ksherim, initially they were righteous. Then the Pasuk says, Vayelchu Vayavou. They went and they came. Rashi says that compares their going to their coming. Just like they came with bad advice, so too they went with a bad idea. Understand, if they were all righteous, they didn't go with a bad idea. But the pshat is like this. When Moshe chooses them, they were righteous. Because if they're going from Moshe, they're tmimim. But once they decide to go from the nature of the Jewish people, to be the representatives of the Jewish people, so now already they're questioning people. And they weren't going in the right way. That caused all the problems from the very beginning. And here says the Shem Yishmol, Kmo Beklal Kein Befrat. What's true about the nation is true about each of us individually. Kesha Adam Oseh B'Tmimut. If a person decides to live life as a tamim, I'm going to live life accepting God. I'm not going to ask questions. I'm not going to try to outsmart him. I'm not going to challenge him. Whatever he says, I'm going to do. Porek nimanu ol chesbonos harab. And a person throws away all the different calculations. Nimshach achar das haTorah. And whatever the Torah says, he follows. So then, misor l'umaso etzem haratzon v'ahava musuteres shebetoch omek libo. And that means that he's living the way his deepest heart wants him to live, with a deep love for God. That's Eretz Yisrael. That's the will of the Jewish people. That's perhaps the nature of Shabbos. We know that Hashem told us the mitzvah of Shabbos twice in the Ten Commandments. We have Zacharis Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho, and in Parshas Vayeschanan, Shomeris Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho. Zachar is a mitzvah saseh, a positive command. Shomer is a prohibition. But yet, according to the Kabbalah, we fulfill Shomer Friday night. And Zachar is Shabbos morning. What's the idea? Perhaps the idea is that Shamar is a mitzvah slosaseh. We step away from all the worries. We step away from all the calculations and all the thinking. And we say, you know what? Whatever my business is, it's fine. However amount of money I have, it's fine. And now I'm just for Hashem. And when I'm for Hashem, with the Zachar, and a person merits that the innermost will of his heart comes out. Maybe that's what their Zachar v'Shamar come together, B'dibur Echad Namru. Maybe that's the opposite of the sin of the spies. The spies, they had too many calculations, they didn't have bitachon, they didn't have tmimus, and as a result, we lost the land of Israel, and we ended up in exile. That's one idea that the Shem Yishmol said. So almost you can feel there's a war. And the answer to a war, the answer to the uncertainty is, we have to be tzmimim. We need to accept God's will, we need to accept God's judgment, accept God's guidance, not to figure it all out, we don't know what the answers are, but to be a holech betamim, to go with Hashem, with tzmimus, with complete faith, without the eitz hadas, just to accept the das of the Torah, the will of the Torah, and then to be very, very attached to Hashem. In the next passage that the Shem Yishmol said in 1915, he spoke about a comment of the Zohar. The Zohar says, the Pasuk says about the spies, Kulam Anashim, they were all great men. And yet, how did great men end up coming back with a negative report, ruining our entry into the land of Israel? So the Zohar says, that's why they came back with a negative report, because they were great men. They figured here in the desert, we're the leaders. If we go into Israel, we're going to lose the position of being leaders. So we have to give a bad report to prevent us from getting into Israel. So ask the Shem Yishmol, what are they gaining? If they're going to give a bad report, they'll lose their position in the desert too. So what do they think they're going to get by giving a bad report? So he said the following very, very interesting explanation. It was very hard for them. It was a very difficult challenge. And when there's a very difficult challenge, you know, there was a lot of tumah in the land of Israel. You had all the Canaanim and Avodah Zarah. It's very hard to overcome. It's very, very hard to overcome. The only way you can overcome a very difficult challenge is with complete mesiras nefesh. Complete sacrifice of self. That's what the Medrash is saying. They couldn't fully sacrifice themselves because they were thinking, you know, if we go in, we're going to lose a position, we're going to lose holiness. They couldn't give up everything. But to overcome a really deep challenge, that's what's needed. What's needed is to fully, fully sacrifice oneself. And the Shem Yishmol now adds something very beautiful. If a person fully sacrifices himself, there's no me here. It's just the will of God right now. If one fully, fully surrenders himself, if there's no personal ego, no personal sense, then he merits to see that really there's only God. And then there are no forces of evil against him. Because the forces of evil hide God. But once there's only God revealed, the forces of evil can't do anything to him. It reminds me of an episode that occurred, I guess it's now 6 years ago, in the summer of 2000, no, it's less. In the yeah, 6 years ago, in the summer of winter of 2009, right when Bush was completing his presidency. So it was the winter of 2008, beginning of 2009. Israel went to war against Gaza. It's called Operation Cast Lead. I think it was in Operation Cast Lead. This was either in Cast Lead or maybe it was in the last war. Maybe it was in Pillar of Cloud, Amud Anan. I don't remember. But there was this war between Israel and Gaza. I think it was Cast Lead. And there was a terrible, terrible episode. There was a soldier and the paratroopers who went into a house. Called in tank fire, and a tank by mistake put in the wrong coordinates and they hit his house. Mm. They killed him. His name was Amos Netanel. Now his father was a young married man, had a 1-year-old daughter. His father is a Rav in Kedumim, Rav Amos Netanel. So when this happened, his father did an unbelievable thing. You know, some of the officers came out of Gaza to comfort him, sitting Shiva. So he said to them, I have a request. I have a letter that I wrote, and I need you to deliver it for me. So it was a letter that he wrote to the tank crew. And in the letter he wrote, you, the following crew who shot the rocket, I want you to know that you did not cause my son to die. My son was sent to this world to live 27 years. And when the 27 years were up, it was time for my son's soul to leave. And his soul was going to leave on that day, no matter what you did or what you didn't do. It was his time to leave because he had finished his mission in this world. And I actually take comfort that it was you who shot the rocket. Because the alternative would have been that a Hamasnik would have killed my son. And I feel that my son was so special and holy, impure hands should not be able to touch him. And I believe that my son is in Gan Eden now because he gave his life, and his life was taken as part of a battle to preserve Jewish life. That's Kiddush Hashem, that's Harugei Malchus. And I want you to know that part of war is that there's friendly fire and there are casualties. And if we wouldn't be willing to know that, we'd be afraid to fire because maybe we'll hit our own men and we might lose the war. And we need to be as strong as we can be against this enemy to be able to stay in this land. So I ask you one thing. Don't give up. Continue further to hit the enemy so that the Jewish people can have peace. And when it all ends, I have a final request that you come to my home and spend Shabbos with us so that every member of our family will give each of you a hug. And that's how he signed the letter from each of the members of his family. So I remember I happened to have the privilege to be in Israel then, and I was talking with a soldier who was in the paratroopers. He was a quartermaster. He was an officer on the base there, the main paratroop training base in the Negev. And he said to me that this war, it was cast lead, it was 2009. It's different than the last war, which was in 2006, the Second Lebanon War. He said in the Second Lebanon War, the soldiers felt very dispirited. It was a lot of, an order, and then the order was reversed, and there was hesitancy, and then they were thrown in, and they felt they didn't know what they were doing. And the army tried something new. They had some of the leaders of the war were using cameras and screens to tell people how to fight instead of leading by going in front of the troops. So the troops were demoralized by it. They felt like, well, it helps the troops when they see the leader going ahead and taking the lead of the battle. So this war, he said, when this letter came out and it was reported in the press, it gave such a spirit to the soldiers, because of course they were demoralized that they had hit a fellow man. But to feel that that family is not demoralized, and they're saying go further, and they're declaring faith, that gave such kochos. It gave such kochos that they all, wanted to go forward. And in fact, the day he told me that, the chief of staff, Gabi Ashkenazi, he went into Gaza City to show that he himself was going to go all the way to the front line. He was going to be right there where things were happening. So later in that war, there was a very sad story. There was a soldier. His name is Aharon Karov. Aharon Karov had gotten married. Several days after he got married, it was like a day later, he got married Thursday night, Shabbos morning, he left his wife because he was called to come back to the soldiers to take them into battle on Shabbos. So he was in battle, and it was the whole story, Chatan mechupato, it's in the Gemara, and in Melchemes Mitzvah, the groom leaves the chuppah. So his father is also a rabbi, Rabbi Zev Karov. It's a big story, Chatan Mechupato. There's a whole debate about it in the Knesset. Was it a good thing or a bad thing? Anyway, he went in to battle. And unfortunately, after about a week and a half of battle, he was in a house, and very courageously, he climbed. He was leading his soldiers up the house, the first floor, second floor. When he got up to the third floor, he opened the door. There was a mine there, and the whole house collapsed on him. He was very, very badly wounded, both from the shrapnel and from the impact. And he was airlifted. And in the helicopter, the surgeon, Dr. Johnson, had to cut open his throat and insert a trach because he was almost dead in the helicopter to keep him alive. And miraculously, he got into the hospital. He was still alive in the hospital. And then he's had a miraculous recovery. He just ran the New York Marathon this year with Dr. Johnson. They ran it together. It's an amazing miracle. So when that happened, I was in Israel, and I actually was at the same time, when I was at this paratroop base, I was talking to one of the officers there in the paratroop base. And he told me he had gone to visit Aharon Karov in the hospital in Petah Tikva. And And he said to me, he's not going to make it. Mm. He said he's got a piece of shrapnel in his brain. He has another piece in his heart. And then how do you live with that? So he said, I didn't know what to do. I called Rabbi Amos Netanel to daven for Aharon Karov. Mm. And it's an amazing thing. Aharon Karov, he ran the marathon this year. So that's what the Shem Yishmuel says. When a person believes there's only God, even friendly fire is the hand of God. It's just God. It's nothing else. That's a tremendous spiritual power. That's a tremendous thing. That can overcome anything. That could overcome anything. Look at the power of the bracha of this man. Amazing. Amazing. That could overcome anything. When the spies went, they didn't have that level of negation. They were still interested in themselves and their position, and they were going, but they wanted for themselves. They wanted for themselves already. So then it's a very difficult challenge. There were a lot of kochos, there were a lot of forces of impurity. And those forces of impurity got to them. And that's why they failed and they didn't succeed. But the lesson is that we have to try to do for God and to completely surrender for God. And when we do that, then Be'ezrat Hashem, we have great, great strength. And all the forces of evil, they all melt away. They all can't stand against us. These are some ideas. Thank you.
I was wondering when the pigeon...